Welcome, listeners and coffee lovers. I'm Kristen Aiken, executive editor of Taste at the Huffington Post. You're listening to a HuffPost audio feature, and today we're talking all about iced coffee. Every year, as the weather begins to turn from winter to spring, coffee drinkers and makers eagerly welcome the switch from hot to cold drinks. There's innovation happening in the neighborhood coffee shops all around the globe, and the variations of iced coffee that are available to us now are becoming more and more exciting. So put away your steamed milk and your hot coffee and join us as we speak with the experts to lay out the spectrum of cold coffee drinks and find out which is the best way to take your iced coffee. So cold brew is probably the easiest iced coffee to find out there. And one company that's done a lot to help cold brew grow in popularity is Stumptown Coffee Roasters. We had the chance to catch up with Diane Aylesworth, Stumptown's Vice President of Cold Brew, which, by the way, is the best job title ever. She explained to us how Stumptown makes their cold brew and why it's become their specialty.
I think what honestly attracted me to Stumptown in the first place was the first time I had cold brew in a bottle. It blew my mind because no one was putting really good cold black coffee in a package. And I think, you know, what we're doing to deliver this delicious, smooth black coffee that you can drink straight to so many people is easily, to me, the selling point. Cold brew is actually brewed at room temperature and doesn't have heat applied to it through the brewing process. So it's actually a longer steeping process. And that has a really big impact on the flavor of what flavors it pulls out of the coffee. But also typically when you're brewing something hot, you're pulling out certain flavor profiles that taste good when you drink it hot. But then when you cool down an iced coffee, often some of the bitter and more harsh notes shine through in a cold format. And so that's why we prefer the cold brewing method, because it creates a smoother, sweeter flavor to the coffee.
So can you explain exactly how Stumptown makes it in large batches, like from start to finish?
Sure. We actually use large brew equipment from the craft beer industry. And so we start by adding the freshly roasted ground coffee to the tank, and then we add water. We typically do that in the afternoon, and then that batch actually sits there for 12 to 16 hours until the crew comes in the morning. So it's a very long steeping process. We then take it through a couple different levels of filtration to get it to a really clean cold brew without any sediment in it. And so we then cut that with water to get it to drinking strength. And from there, we bottle it, we keg it, put it in cans, mix it with dairy, put it into cartons. So quite a few different formats there.
So the process, if someone wanted to make it just like Stumptown at home, would be exactly the same, but just in smaller portions?
Totally. A lot of folks do it with a French press. So you can start it in the afternoon, leave it on your counter, put it in your fridge. It'll be ready to go in the morning. As long as you have a vessel and a way to filter it, it's really not rocket science. It's really a simple brew method. You just have to plan ahead 16 hours.
We wanted to go deeper into the world of cold brew. So Diane sent us to Stumptown's training lab at their cafe at West 8th and McDougal Streets here in New York. That's where we met Emily Rosenberg and David Chow, two baristas and coffee educators with Stumptown.
I'm Emily Rosenberg, and I manage education and account development.
I'm David Chow. I'm an account manager and coffee educator.
They walked us through a demo of their cold brew lineup. First, we tried their cold brew on tap. A refreshing blend that's almost so mild, it'd make a great entry point to coffee for even a non-coffee drinker.
All right, so original cold brew is all fresh crop Latin American coffees that we source specifically for cold brew. If you're making it at home, our house blend is a relative approximation, but the coffees that we choose for this are specifically to get the flavor and texture that we want for the cold brew. It's really smooth. It's very creamy. I think, you know, tasting notes we're looking for in this are lots and lots of chocolate, really rounded acidity, lots of sweetness. And it's delicious on its own. It's also really great with a little milk. You know, I'd say drinkers that might otherwise add sugar to their coffee can get away with this.
You'd never need it in this.
Yeah, and especially with
Next, we tried the Nitro Cold Brew on tap, which is made from that same cold brew blend, but is infused with nitrogen to give it a stout-like cascade and a smooth mouthfeel.
This looks exactly like a Guinness. It has that milky white top, and it's kind of effervescing and clearing up from the bottom up.
Yeah, we're big beer fans at Stumptown. And so, you know, we already had it in kegs. It's like, what else do you do with stuff in kegs?
Can you explain exactly from start to finish how this one's made compared to the last one?
So the brewing is the same. And after it's cut with water, then it's infused with nitrogen. So there's actually nitrogen in the keg itself. And then we've got it hooked up to the same kind of tap you'd use for a Guinness, Boddington's, that sort of thing, a stout tap. Both the original cold brew and the nitro cold brew are pushed using just nitrogen. So like a beer line, you'd usually push with CO2 or maybe a mix of CO2 and nitrogen. This has to be nitrogen because the oxygen and the CO2 will oxidize the product. So it's pushed at about 40 PSI and then forced through this smaller exit point to help with that cascading effect. So the same things that you liked in the original cold brew, it has all of that with a really creamy mouthfeel.
It seems like it's kind of like drinking a beer.
That's one of the most common things I hear customers say is, it's like beer in the middle of the day. And they're very excited about that. So you get a little best of both worlds.
Before we left, we tried some of Stumptown's packaged cold brew products. One of them being their coconut cold brew, which is something we'll be coming back for all summer. So it's easy to see why Stumptown favors cold brew as a matter of efficiency and scale. But among the larger community of specialty coffee roasters and consumers, there's a divide that runs much deeper. That's one of the main reasons we wanted to speak with journalist Oliver Strand, who's written extensively about what he calls ice brew, a hand-poured iced coffee brewing method. We talked about the differences between cold brew and ice brew and why coffee nerds feel so strongly about this.
Some coffee nerds are very, very into cold brew. For the previous few years, it was both popular and also extremely unpopular in these kind of intelligent, edgy, serious coffee shops. And other coffee nerds, it's just the worst thing that you can do. It's the worst way to make coffee. You lose everything that is special about coffee. So there's actually a bit of a schism within coffee nerddom as to whether or not cold brew is good or bad. For the detractors, they believe that that method, you just oxidize it. It tastes really kind of nasty and a little old. And because you're not exposing the coffee to heat, you don't get out all of the interesting compounds that make great coffee great. And there's a lot of interesting acid compounds in coffee that's more like a wine than the stomach churning acids that you have in like coffee out of a coffee urn. So you don't get a lot of the citric acid or phosphoric acid, and that's what coffee nerds love in their coffee.
So you're towing the line pretty well about not displaying any preferences over cold brew or ice brew, but we've read that you did start making ice brew at home. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so ice brew, and that's just the name that I slapped on it. Other people use other names because it's not really a codified technique. Basically, you brew coffee as you normally would if you were using a Chemex or if you're using any kind of pour over, like a Hario V60 or a Kalita Wave. And you more or less use only half the hot water, and you take that amount of water and you use ice cubes instead. So if you're using 500 grams of water, which I guess lets you know how much of a coffee nerd I am because I weigh out my liquids, as everybody should. So you'll put 250 grams of ice cubes into the bottom of the vessel, and then you'll just go and brew your coffee. But instead of with 500 grams of water, you'll use 250 grams of water. So you're not getting the full extraction. You're not getting exactly the hot coffee that you would get. But most of the extraction happens in the first part of making coffee. So you get most of it, and it basically shocks it. So it's hot water onto the ice. It should be enough of the ice that it's still cold, and then you drink that. You get all of the acids. You get a lot of the compounds that you would get because you're just brewing your coffee in a normal way. I really like that, but that's because I spend a lot of money on my coffee. And when I buy expensive coffee, I want to be able to taste everything I'm paying for.
So because of nuances like this, do you find people really are making a lot of it at home or leaving it up to their favorite coffee houses?
I find both. I think with ice brew, if you are making coffee as a pour over in the morning anyway, then it's an easier transition because you're already kind of locked in because, you know, you've got your grinder and you've got your hot water and you have all your tools right there. And you pretty much know the flavors that you like in the morning. So all that you're doing is you're transitioning from pure hot to cold. I think that the biggest adjustment that you're going to have to make is how to get a little bit more out of that extraction quickly in order to get more of the coffee onto the ice.
And there's a third category that I think a lot of people are making at home that we don't really talk about very often. It's just that people who are hot brewing their coffee and putting it in the fridge for a while.
Yeah, it's a terrible
idea.
Yeah,
explain to us why that's a terrible idea.
It's a really bad idea. This has to do with the compounds that are found in coffee. So there are good acids like citric acid, which is what you find in lemons and oranges. And there is phosphoric acid, which is what you find in blackberries and also in Coca-Cola. It's a very important ingredient in Coca-Cola. Malic acid, which is what you get like when you bite into a green apple. That's just like a pure explosion of malic acid. So these are great acids and they tickle your palate and they make you very happy and they make coffee tasty. Then there's quinic acid, which appears when you brew, and that can actually develop over time. So when you think of acidic coffee and it's like in the office and it makes your stomach churn, that's the acid that you are tasting. And when you take hot coffee and you put it in the refrigerator, you basically are turning your little coffee pot into a petri dish for the development of quinic acid. So it's very, very unpleasant. So when people say, I don't like acidic coffee, that's true, but it's not the whole story. Acidic coffee is actually really good if it's all the good acids, but this kind of crummy, nasty acid is what you don't want.
So we're here in New York, and you've expressed in the past that New York's usually a step behind kind of in the coffee world. So yeah. What's your best advice for anyone who wants to seek out better coffee?
At this point, pretty much any American town of any size has a coffee shop that is paying attention and that's a part of this conversation and that is trying hard. That's extraordinary. That wasn't the case a few years ago. So go to that shop and talk to them and try what they suggest. You know, and try a different thing and try another thing. For many people, coffee is a source of comfort and it is found in repetition and in a familiarity. And that's fine. But there's also a lot to get out of coffee by trying something new and unexpected. When I go out to a restaurant, I don't want a roast chicken that I've been having my entire life or that I grew up with. I want to see what the restaurant's doing. And when I go to a new coffee shop, I want to see what that coffee shop is doing. So if you have that mindset when you go into that shop, then you will stand a better chance of learning something. It depends on the person you are. I think that I've seen iced coffee become this event. It's like almost like a social event. It's almost like the daffodils appearing in New York, like the first iced coffee day Twitter blows up where there are people saying it's iced coffee season, it's iced coffee weather, and everybody's very excited about that. And it feels like the first day that you can go out without a sweater or the first day that you can sit on the grass and enjoy yourself. You know, it's part of the welcoming of the season. So I think there's this social aspect which is really extraordinary and has developed entirely organically. Like there's no Iced Coffee Association of America that's trying to get everybody to pay attention to iced coffee. It's just what's happened, and it's happened very recently.
As Oliver said, coffee really is a source of comfort. And whether you find your comfort in cold brew, ice brew, or that taboo brew that you've chilled in your refrigerator, just get out there and have some fun finding your best one. Happy iced coffee season. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked this episode, check out HuffPost podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or your favorite podcast app. Many thanks to our guests, Diane Aylesworth, Emily Rosenberg, and David Chow from Stumptown Coffee Roasters, and to journalist Oliver Strand. This episode was produced and edited by Nick Offenberg with help from senior producer Caitlin Boguki. Lastly, additional thanks to Mark Jenks and Ji Sub Jung of HuffPost Test Kitchen.